Hello, and welcome to Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, and doing our audio engineering today is James Zipperot. Here on Teen Scientist, I bring news stories of groundbreaking innovations in STEAM disciplines entirely from a youth perspective. We feature young researchers and respected experts in their fields at the local, national, and international levels. Today, we are thrilled to welcome Alyssa Cobella, an associate principal scientist at Merck. Beyond her groundbreaking work in the pharmaceutical industry, Alyssa is also an outspoken advocate for MS awareness, leveraging her platform to inspire and educate others. How are you doing today, Alyssa?
I'm great, Abby. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you so much for joining us here today on Teen Scientist. Now, to kick things off, can you please tell me a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. So my name is Alyssa Cobella, as you mentioned. I live in the Lehigh Valley area. I am like you said, a scientist at Merck. I've been with Merck for almost 12 years now. And before that, I worked at a small little research facility in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I have my bachelor's of science in chemistry, and I have a master's of pharmacy and pharmaceutical chemistry. And yeah, that's pretty much about my background and my education. And I also am an MS warrior. I have multiple sclerosis and was diagnosed with that in 2018.
Besides science, what hobbies and activities do you do in your free time?
Well, one of my favorite things is to hang out with my almost four-year-old little son, Koa, and my husband, Chris. But other than that, I love CrossFit and Olympic weightlifting, so I participate in both of those as well.
Olympic lifter and a world-class CrossFitter, right?
Yep, that's right. I am the 2024 Adaptive CrossFit Champion in the women's neuromuscular minor division.
Yeah, I've seen you in action. You're a beast. So you wear many hats, scientist, advocate, and innovator. What motivates you to excel in these roles?
For me, it's always just been about curiosity, one. And the second thing is I've always had an interest in, you know, leaving the world a better place, whether that's through, you know, my job as a scientist, bringing new medicines to the world, or what I do in my time of advocacy, working with the organization MS for MS. It's always been about just helping people. And that's always been just a strong suit of mine and an area of interest of mine. So that's definitely an underlying motivating driver.
With your motivation, let's start in the beginning. What sparked your interest in science as a younger girl? Was there a particular experiment, class, or like moment that really hooked you on getting into science or pharmaceutical?
Oh, yes. So I always loved science and math, even from a very, very young age. But when I was a junior in high school, I had a teacher, and on the first day of our AP chemistry class, he dropped a piece of pure sodium into water. And if you don't know the reaction that it has, it explodes. This pure sodium pulls a hydrogen off the water, or the oxygen molecule off the water, and yeah, explosion. I immediately was like, oh my God, that is so cool. Just from there, I was kind of hooked on chemistry. I also liked anatomy and physiology and biology. I thought for a long time I would go into medicine, but then I realized that I didn't really love like working direct with people all the time. I was more interested in being in the lab and looking for, you know, asking questions and looking for answers. So that's kind of what drove me toward the more chemistry side of things. But yeah, that was definitely the aha moment that I really loved chemistry. And from there, it was, you know, all about chem.
I've gotten to witness that in my chemistry class, and I was absolutely infatuated by it. Was that kind of your turning point to choose pharmaceutical, or how did you define that moment?
Yeah, so like I said, I initially got into chem, and I wanted to teach because when I was in high school and in early college, I played field hockey as well. And I kind of wanted to coach field hockey. So I thought, well, if I want to coach field hockey, I could be a teacher and then coach after school. So that was kind of the path I was driving down for a while. And then I kind of started taking more courses and learning about like pharmaceutical industry and development and research. And that kind of started to make me think like, oh, maybe I don't want to work with teenagers. maybe I'd be more, probably be better suited to, you know, maybe get a job in a lab and then I could just, you know, play or coach field hockey on the side later. So that's kind of where I started to diverge from the teaching of science plan to more of the doing of science plan. So now I do science instead of teaching it.
As you do science, what are key areas you focus on day to day? Can you walk us through your role?
So I'll quick start with saying when I first started in the pharma industry, my role was a bench scientist. So I was in the lab every day working on things like testing of raw materials to make sure that they meet specifications, that they're pure, that they have all the properties that they claim to have. And then those raw materials would be in turn used to make drug products later on. So that's what I did at first. And then I got a job at Merck in their analytical research organization. And it was in a space that kind of connected that early research and the late phase where, you know, we're taking drugs to a big manufacturing facility. So I got to see a lot of the spectrum. And again, still working as a bench scientist, but doing a little bit more development, doing a little bit more strategizing on how to make sure that the drugs are quality drugs and the testing methods to make sure that the drugs are quality drugs. So that's what I did then. I'm now in the regulatory space, which I'm not hands-on in the lab anymore, partly because of my MS, but also because of the flexibility of working in the space I work in now. So now I officially work in what's called chemistry, manufacturing, and controls in the pre-approval space. And what that's a big fancy term for, when we try to bring new drugs to market, it has to go through regulatory agencies. And we are in charge of getting all the documents and information together that has to do with the chemistry, manufacturing, and quality control of the drugs that we are trying to bring to the market. So it's a big piece of what goes into agencies for them to review and give the stamp of approval for to bring a new drug to market. So that's what I do now.
Those are both fascinating things. I would say very different on the spectrum. What would you say your favorite has been out of all of those?
Ooh, that's a great question. So my first position at Merck, I enjoyed because I got to travel with that position. I got to go to Ireland for 6 months and live there.
Oh, that's so cool.
At one of the manufacturing sites. To work at one of the manufacturing sites on a project that I was working on. And so that was a really amazing experience. I also got to go to Belgium with that role. So it was really cool to get to see other countries just through working. Now the job, I love the flexibility. I love working. I work with cross-functional teams. So I get to see not just the chemistry and like the quality control part that I was doing before. I could just see the entire process and work with people from all different areas, from clinical to manufacturing to packaging, supply chain. So I get to touch and work with all of those different groups. So because of that, I learn a little bit about everything. So for me, who's very curious and constantly wanting to learn things, it's a great role to have because it's like I get to learn a little bit of everything working with all those groups.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, science is rarely a solo effort. Can you talk about kind of the importance of teamwork? I know you talk about working with different teams, but how do you incorporate that in your day to day?
Yeah, so at Merck, it's definitely we push collaboration. That's how we move things forward. We definitely work in teams. There's no solo efforts for sure. So when we're doing that, one of the things that helps us make great teams is that we do at Merck have a focus on inclusion, diversity, equity, inclusion. So we make sure we're following those guiding principles and making sure that when we're working in teams that we are working well together, that we are listening very well to each other, and that, you know, when conflicts do arise or disagreements do arise, we are taking care of them in a diplomatic way and ensuring that, you know, everyone's voice is heard and then making strategic decisions together.
I mean, having a plan in place for that is great to hear that you guys have that. Collaboration is so important in science. What would you say is the most valuable lesson you've learned through teamwork, working with Merck, and then also having to navigate kind of when you guys hit those rough patches with people? What have you learned from working with a team on a complex project?
Yes, no project I've ever worked on has been an easy project. I'll say that. So somehow I always get assigned projects that are a little off the wall or out of the box or something we've never done before or tried before or first time for Merck.
Hey, that just means that they want you to do it. You're
yeah,
the girl to go
great,
through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's fun because, like I said, I get in my new job, I do get to leverage a lot of that experience that I've had before from my analytical days. So I'll say, you know, the biggest thing that I've learned is that you don't always have to be the loudest voice in the room, making sure that you're listening and hearing everybody else out, because you never know what you're going to learn while you're listening. And then the second biggest thing that I learned is when we do make mistakes, to take ownership of them, but look at them as opportunities to learn and do better next time, you know, because mistakes are going to happen, especially when we have projects that are moving sometimes at paces faster than we can even keep up with, to try to get drugs to the market as fast as possible for patients in need. You know, mistakes happen, things happen, and just learning to take ownership and being okay with saying, like, I made a mistake, own it, and say I've learned from it and don't make that mistake again, I think is one of the best lessons that I've learned, and something that continues to, you know, help me have a growth mindset so that I continue to, you know, expand and build on my career.
It's always important to kind of realize, especially in the industry that you're in, everything matters. Every little detail matters. So say somebody made a mistake. What plan and action would you have then to kind of fix what happened?
Yeah, I think it definitely depends on what the mistake is in particular. But when things do happen and we find errors, we definitely will raise it up to management if necessary, or to the team first, and then if necessary, management for further discussion if needed. Because, you know, sometimes, because it is a regulated environment, if there's a mistake in like a regulatory filing that went in, or a mistake in a lab result that we reported to an agency, we do have to go back and retroactively fix that. And, you know, like if you think about it, if we have too many errors, you know, agencies aren't going to start to not believe us, or they might question our integrity of our data. So we definitely have a lot of stop gates to make sure that we don't have those errors. But if they do happen, and when they do happen, we make sure that, like I said, we identify them, we remediate them, and then we learn from them. So we share out, you know, with the broader team, like, hey, this happened, this is what was supposed to happen, and this is, you know, a corrective action, or this is how we're going to prevent this from happening in the future. So we're constantly in a state of being a learning organization, and just making sure that we are delivering the best and most accurate information.
I mean, science is such a growing field. I feel like every second something new in science appears. So honestly, just hearing that and hearing how you guys grow and learn and how you kind of incorporate that into your life and your job is just fantastic. So we are Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, here with Alyssa Cobella, and we're going to take a short break.
Do you have vinyl albums, 45s, or CDs on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the donation, and you can claim a tax deduction. For more information, or to arrange for a drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 or visit wdiy.org.
Hello, this is Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, here with Alyssa Cobella. So the groundbreaking work you've done at Merck highlights your passion for making a difference in the world of science and healthcare. But what's even more inspiring is how your personal journey with MS has shaped your perspective and fueled your advocacy efforts. Can you share this diagnosis, how it changed your life, both personally and professionally?
Yeah, so I was diagnosed in 2018 because I suddenly couldn't see. I mean, I could see light coming through my eyes, but everything was extremely blurry. And after 5 or 6 days stay in the hospital, they came back with, you likely have MS. And at the time, I only knew two people diagnosed with MS, and one was wheelchair bound and couldn't really move anything from her neck down, and the other used a walker to get around. And I immediately was terrified because I had no clue how this was going to impact my life. I didn't have a kid yet, and that was something that my husband Chris and I were planning, family planning to do. So I didn't know how it would impact that, and I didn't know how it was going to impact me at work because I couldn't see. And if you think about being a scientist, you need your eyes for a lot of things, especially in today's day and age. Everything's computerized. So like electronic notebooks, everything's on the computer. So if you can't read a computer, you can't really do your job. So I was worried at first. Fortunately, my vision did come back, and it was able to be corrected. Whatever damage was done by the optic neuritis, which is lesions on your optic nerve, which are caused by MS, and in my case, whatever damage was done by that was able to be corrected by glasses. So, you know, the impacts I saw at first were very minimal. I'd suffered with a lot of fatigue, but I kind of was able to get through that. I use exercise actually to combat the fatigue. And then I kind of started having issues with my fine motor skills. And that's finally what kind of drove me from being in the lab. I kind of was dropping things a lot out of my hands because they would suddenly just like not work, or I was shaky when I was trying to weigh things. And that's not really conducive to weighing, to being precise in the lab. So I did fortunately find another role within Merck that I could kind of move into, the current role I'm in now. So yeah, I mean, I definitely have had a lot of different struggles and things come up professionally, but fortunately at Merck, they're very amenable. They accommodate me very well. I now have a flexible work arrangement. I do work fully remotely with the option to go into the office if I need to or want to. So things like that, they've been able to do for me to make sure that I continue to do my job and execute it well. And then just personally, like I said, the fatigue is a big thing, but you know, I continue to stay in shape and use exercise to kind of combat that fatigue. So that's kind of how it's impacted me, you know, personally and professionally.
Besides all of that and how Merck has influenced everything and helping you cope with that, your experience with MS, how did it shape the way you kind of approach your scientific work?
Yeah, I'll say being a patient of a disease that doesn't have a cure definitely makes me even more passionate to bring medicines to people to help them, especially if we can bring medicines that cure patients to people and vaccines that can prevent diseases to people. So it's certainly made me realize that the work that I do matters. You know, we're saving and improving lives every day with our medicines around, you know, I think our Keytruda, which is our one of our cancer drugs, has reached over a million patients, and maybe, yeah, over a million patients worldwide. So the work we do matters. And I love hearing like the patient stories and the success stories. And, you know, being a patient myself, like I said, makes it me connect even more to the mission of our business. So that's definitely has helped me in my career remain passionate about my day-to-day job, even though some people might find it really boring sitting in meetings or, you know, just reviewing documents all day. But for me, it's exciting because, you know, the end is going to be a submission to a regulatory agency and hopefully an approval to bring a new medication to market.
You're incredibly passionate and you definitely have a drive for it. It's amazing with the work you do. You're a strong ambassador for MS awareness. What are some key initiatives or campaigns that you might have been a part of also outside of your job?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, I'm an ambassador for, it's called Mission Stadiums for Multiple Sclerosis, MS4MS. So with that organization, we are spreading, quote unquote, spreading orange, which orange is the color of MS awareness. Our mission is to help raise funds and money for clinical research that goes into finding a cure, hopefully for MS one day. And then the other piece of what we raise money for is to directly help patients or people with MS that might not have the means to, for example, sometimes there might be on a disability check and it doesn't come in time and they might get kicked out because they can't make rent. We step in and we'll pay their rent for them for a month. Or there's a young girl, 16 years old, who has MS, and she was trying to get a service dog and raise money to get a service dog. And MS for MS stepped in and purchased the service dog for her. So just little things like that we use the money toward helping people that have MS that might have a need for something, but don't have the funding themselves or the insurance coverage to do it. It, like all of our funds, it's a completely nonprofit organization. Everything goes back to research or people in need with MS. And I'm fortunate enough to be one of the ambassadors on that team. And I leverage, you know, my social media platforms and I leverage my CrossFit platform in the CrossFit space to be an ambassador and to spread the word and awareness that, you know, just because you have MS doesn't mean it has you. You can still do anything that you want to do. It might take longer to get to a goal, or it might be you might have to adapt the goal, but you can still accomplish hard things. So that's definitely what being an ambassador has done for me. I've connected with so many people. Like I said before, I only knew two people in the world that had MS in the time I was diagnosed back in 2018. And now I probably know, and personally, I know like 200 people plus with MS. So it's just, you know, people reaching out to me on social media saying like, oh, I saw your CrossFit video or saw you competing and I know you have MS. This is amazing. Like, I want to get into this. I want to do this. I have MS too. You know, I've had people reaching out to me that have had strange symptoms and, you know, or just recently diagnosed with MS, asking like, is this like a death sentence or is this like a wheel? Does this mean my life is going to completely turn upside down? Like, so it's been amazing to connect with so many people, you know, on that. And one of those people actually happens to be one of my fellow ambassadors, Tom, who was just diagnosed last year, actually. Aww. Him reaching out to me, you know, chatting with me about things like that.
For those living with MS, like you said, you kind of have that initial thought, oh my gosh, what is my life going to be now? And any chronic illness, really, and kind of how you inspire people is really honestly just so heartwarming to me. So what advice or encouragement would you offer to other people in your sense of how your journey's been?
Yeah, I would say, you know, allow yourself to go through the grieving process because, you know, you do grieve the person that you could have been should you have not been diagnosed with a chronic illness or, you know, whatever it is, you know, cancer, God forbid, MS, lupus, any other autoimmune, you know, all those chronic illnesses, mental health struggles, etc. You know, allow yourself to grieve. It took me about 3 years to go through that grieving process and come to a place of acceptance. And then, you know, when you do come to that place of acceptance, realize that you can still do hard things. You know, goals might be a little bit different, but you can still do hard things. Like, have a goal and go reach for it, because like, it's not, like I said before, you might have MS, but it does not have you. It doesn't define who you are or what you can do.
Yeah, that's a great message. And you're working, you do CrossFit. Like you said, you were worried about not having kids. You have a family now. Everything seems great. And it's honestly probably such an inspiration for people to hear about you, see about you, and kind of how you present yourself on your platform is truly inspirational. Your journey with MS is a testament to resilience and your personal experiences to inspire change. Beyond advocacy, any way you're making a difference is through your contributions to the scientific community and beyond. Let's talk about how your work and expertise create ripple effects for the greater good. So you've achieved so much. What advice would you have for teens considering a path in STEM now?
Oh man, just keep asking questions, stay curious. You know, there's such great social platforms and things out there, like create a LinkedIn, even if you don't have a job yet, create a LinkedIn and connect with somebody in the field that you think you want to go into or has a job that you think you want. And just say, hi, I saw you're in this role in this company, and I'm a junior in high school and I'm considering becoming a scientist. What advice can you give me? There's so many people out there that are willing to, you know, chat and help the future generations. I'm one of them. So if you ever see me on LinkedIn or have questions, you can definitely, you know, ask me. But learn as much as you can, ask questions. And when you are, you know, you go to college and things like that, don't be laser focused in selecting exactly what you're going to major in, like the day you step foot on campus, like explore different opportunities and different pathways to get to there. And, you know, just get involved with, you know, whether it's through internship, whether it's through volunteering, get involved with different things where you can learn different skills. People that are in college getting a degree, get a degree. What'll set you apart when you're going for a job is all the extra stuff. What kind of skills did you learn or have that you can lend to the job you're applying for, and getting real world experience to do those things, whether it's through, like I said, internship, whether it's through volunteering, you can get all that kind of experience.
With experience, what qualities do you think are most important for young scientists to develop in going into these fields?
I think resilience is one of them, because when you go into science, math, engineering, any of that stuff, there's always going to be failures. I mean, we bring maybe one drug to market for every 10,000 that we discover. So if you think about it, that's a lot of failure, right? So you have to be okay and learn that that failure isn't final. You know, it's the courage to continue that counts. And I think it's Winston Churchill that actually said that, you know, failure isn't final.
Yeah.
So be okay with failure and look at it again from it as a growth opportunity, right? If you do fail at something, learn from it, take ownership of it, really start developing and honing in on, you know, different leadership skills, whether it be emotional intelligence, learning to work well with people, learning to, you know, if you're more outspoken, like me, learning to sometimes take a step back to listen, or if you're maybe more soft-spoken, learning to step up and speak out a little bit more. So just learning those kind of soft skills will definitely help separate and give you a good future, right?
Yeah. Science is such a huge field, kind of finding your niche and what you like and taking that and making your own path is definitely important. So thank you for your input today and sharing your journey with us. We can't wait to see what you accomplish next. Say, people, when they see this podcast, if they want to get in touch with you, how could they go about doing that?
Yeah, definitely LinkedIn. I'm on there as Alyssa Maltese Covella, I believe. And then my Instagram handle is alyssa.covella. I'm totally open. I love chatting with people, talking to people, especially young people interested in science, you know, person with MS, et cetera. I'm happy and open to chatting and making connections. I think networking is such a big plus and positive that everybody should do it. So if you want to reach out, happy to chat anytime.
Alyssa, your story is incredibly inspiring. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to our listeners. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, and I hope you have a great day.